Mission Transition is a veteran-led project started by still-serving veterans, a nonprofit that helps transitioning military members with all things employment as they look for civilian jobs. Oh, and it doesn't cost you a dime. Find out more at ssv.org. Anyway, here's retired Navy Chief Dave Lakin.
Good morning. I'm Dave Lakin with Still Serving Veterans. I'm the National Program Manager for Veteran Career and Transition Services. Today, we're talking to Dan Goldenberg, who is the Executive Director for the Call of Duty Endowment since 2013. Dan is a retired Navy captain. After 27 years, he's been commanding officer of four different commands, was a carrier-based naval flight officer, special assistant to four secretaries of the Navy, and I can't tell you how honored we are to have him here today, and we appreciate you being with us, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Shipmate. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I have to get all the shipmate stuff out of the way. What carriers were you on?
Enterprise and Eisenhower.
Okay. I was on the Saratoga, Independence, Plank Owner on George Washington, and then did four deployments, I think, on Kitty Hawk out of Yokosuka. So a little bit of time on aircraft carriers myself. Really?
I missed being on Sarah by 2 weeks in my first squadron, but I heard great things.
Yeah, you heard some things. Well, we're very glad to have you with us today. Highlights from your career, those are some incredible postings. What was your favorite posting? The one that you think about the most as you think back about your career?
Oh, man. You're asking me to pick amongst my children, huh?
Yeah.
I think honestly, my first command was just the best. I had one incredible experience after another. There's nothing I do differently. When people thank me for this service, I feel like thanking them back for the opportunity to serve because it was wonderful. But that there's something about that first CO tour, which is just magical. And it was overseas and it was based in the UK and it was just phenomenal. All my commands were awesome, but that was probably the most fun I ever had, short of a detachment off the Enterprise in the Mediterranean for a missile X. That was pretty great. But getting off the ship in the middle of deployment for a couple of weeks was pretty terrific. But no, those are probably some of the highlights.
So that's great. Of all my various commands, I was also shore duty in NAS Norfolk and NAS Pax River, but I did a few years in Puerto Rico and a few years in Sicily, and those overseas tours were just amazing. I loved them.
Done the Sicily thing. So I agree.
Every once in a while, when life gets hard here, I just think back to those days and say, man, it'd be so much simpler to be back at sea.
Absolutely.
So how did you get into philanthropy? What did you do immediately after the service and how did you get into philanthropy?
Yeah, so my first, so I did 9 years active duty as a naval flight officer flying E-2C Hawkeyes. Then I had a short tour in the Pentagon, got out. Literally my first day to go to business school, my first day of business school was 9/11. And I went back in after that into the reserves and did 18 years in the reserves. In parallel to that, I pursued my civilian career. First decade out of the military, I was in management consulting and information services business to have profit and loss responsibility for a couple of businesses, enjoyed that, got to do business on a global scale, which was really neat. But after about a decade of that, I felt a pull to do something with more purpose, and actually an old squadron mate or actually wing mate of mine, from one of our Hornet squadrons and a friend I went to the Naval Academy with, reached out to me and heard about a role that this company, Activision Blizzard, was looking for to run the corporate foundation, the Call of Duty Endowment. And they were looking for a business person who happened to be a veteran. They didn't want someone, especially from the nonprofit sector, because they wanted to take a business-minded approach to this significant social problem of helping vets get jobs. And that was very appealing to me. And it was well-resourced and well-supported by a terrific company. And never looked back. That was 11 years ago. And it's been just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Well, absolutely. I've been associated with several nonprofits since I got out, and you know, it's nice to be able to put your finger on an opportunity to make a difference for people en masse. You know,
absolutely.
I see that you're a graduate of Harvard Business School. Are you familiar with Robert Fuller?
Yes. Yes. Took me a second, but absolutely.
Yeah, he did a study. He's a professor at Harvard Business School, and he headed up a study and eventually titled Hidden Workers. And in that study, one of the things he talks about is that people in general, but you know, for our topic, service members, they end up being the hidden workers of the job market because applicant tracking systems filter them out, right? Because they have what appears to be gaps in service. They often take time off coming out of the service, and you know, some of them just are keyed to filter out military, filter out veterans or veteran spouses in particular. Veterans have something like a 3.5% unemployment rate, and veteran spouses have about a 20% unemployment rate, and that, you know, that can't be a coincidence. So, in your experience with the several nonprofits that you work with, how are we as, and you know, to full disclosure, Still Serving Veterans is a recipient of Call of Duty endowment funding each year for the last several years. In your experience, how are the nonprofits that you work with addressing that hidden workers problem and how is it making a difference?
Yeah, it took me a minute when you said Robert Fuller because I know him as Bob Fuller. So we actually sat down about a year and a half ago, talked about some of this stuff, and he's terrific and really does great service to workers around the country, but also specifically to veterans. And for sure, veterans are hidden workers. A couple of things I want to address, a lot to unpack here. So if I miss anything, Dave, come back at me, please. First of all, the BLS unemployment numbers for veterans are absolute garbage. That's the number that you hear quoted in the press. That's that 3.5 number you mentioned. It's based off, and I've had cause to go deep on it because of some of the work that Still Serving Veterans and some of our other partners have brought to light, which was a number of years ago. I think it was about 6 years ago. You know, we saw the veteran unemployment rate, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, going down, 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 down. But yet demand for help from veterans was going up, 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 up. And we kept asking the question, what's going on here? And anecdotally, what we heard was that despite what the numbers were saying, we were having veterans come in asking for help because they either weren't getting, they had a job, but they weren't getting enough hours, or the rates were so low, you know, that they just couldn't meet and make ends meet. Some of them had two or three jobs and they were facing eviction from their apartments or homes. So we really wanted to understand what was really going on here. First of all, the reason the BLS numbers are crap is because they're based off of one question. And that question is asked by the Census Bureau. A lot of people think the census every 10 years, it's not the only thing they do. Every month they do a survey of households. They've been doing it every month since 1940, and they really haven't changed things too much since then. And they ask one question, and that one question determines the U.S. unemployment rate. And then the second question determines the veteran unemployment rate. So the first question is, last week, were you paid for work? Last week, were you paid for work? If you say yes, you're counted as fully employed. So who can fall into that? Well, someone who worked at Starbucks for 10 hours a week in the past week, or someone who mowed their neighbor's lawn for $25, or someone who drilled in the Guard or Reserve last week but doesn't have a civilian job. According to the government, those folks are all counted as fully employed. The other thing they do is they ask this question, are you a veteran? Now, my dad was in the Army. He was drafted in the 60s, and he served in the airborne. Never was in combat. So to his dying day, he said he was not a veteran. Even though we both know combat status has nothing to do with veteran status. So there are a lot of veterans out there who are veterans who, when asked the question, are you a veteran, will say no. This is particularly true for women. Women veterans often will not, for a variety of reasons, identify as being veterans. So one, you're asking a bogus question. The BLS is asking a bogus question about employment that doesn't measure the quality of employment. Are you making enough to get by? That kind of thing. And two, you're asking veteran status, which is often not correctly calculated, right? So that's why I say the unemployment rate we lean into is really unreliable. All that to say, that's why Bob's work is so important, right? Because now we started to have to ask the question is like, okay, what's going on here? What's driving this? And the answer is underemployment, right? You know, if a vet wants a job, generally speaking, a vet can get a job. It just might not pay the bills. It might not be a good job. Might not be a good fit for the vet. Might not be a good fit for the company. And so there's this, you know, lost potential, right? You know, where we have an incredible set of experiences, education, and skill set amongst veterans that's just not being fully utilized. And so we did a study 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I guess, with ZipRecruiter that validated that fact. And then about 2 years later, LinkedIn did its own survey, which took it even further. And then finally, Penn State did a study most recently. And the latest numbers tell us that underemployment amongst veterans is about 60%. 60%. That means veterans working beneath their objective skill set and experience. That's a horrible shame for the veterans, for their families, and for our country, right? We know that more than 90% of veterans tell us when they take off the uniform, they want to continue serving their in their communities. Well, you can't serve in the community if you can't pay the bills and put a roof over your head, right? So in that way, you know, veterans who are incredible assets to our society are being cast aside because we don't get that, you know, high quality, good fit employment. And that's why it's so important. And I think that's what Bob's work was in many ways highlighting, is that to the conventional job market, their experience looks unconventional or is hard to process. So they end up not getting those high fit jobs that maximize their skills and experience. Sorry for the long winded answer, but I think I hit most of your points.
No, I'm absolutely a geek for numbers and data like that. That's how I end up reading the 75 page Bob Fuller study on hidden workers. But it's funny that you say 60%. I volunteer at a local soup kitchen periodically, cooking on the weekends, and that's the number. When they, you know, they keep data on who they're serving, and they're serving, you know, 2,000-3,000 families at a time during holiday weekends, and 60% is the number. 60% of the people that they serve are veteran families. And that's horrible that, that's the case. Not that we should have any special status over anybody else, but we have such an incredible support network above and beyond what standard civilian, market has. And, it's sad that it should be that way.
It's still serving veterans.
At Still Serving Veterans, we are partners with the Department of Labor in the Employment Navigator pilot program. That's now it's a funded program. And in the last couple of years that program has really been active, they have gone a long way to identify industry best practices with us as veteran service organizations being the industry target. And so what they do is each month they have held a forum where we come in and talk about our best practices, that, you know, what's the secret sauce that we have here at our organization and the other ones that participate, 25 or so at a time that we're on those calls. And, you know, we divulge all our best practices. And for 2 years, they would take those best practices and incorporate them into the TAP program. So as a result, the TAP program, which has been, you know, woefully inadequate for many years, has really seen incredible advancements in the last couple of years. Have you seen that reflected across, you know, your other organizations, how people are coming out a little bit better prepared, or at least differently prepared with a better knowledge base, asking better questions and more better equipped to face the job market as we're finding here?
Yeah, look, this is my view of TAP. It's always been, it's necessary, but inadequate, right? Yeah. It's a prerequisite. It's a 101 kind of thing, right? At the end of the day, when you bring 100 Marines in a classroom and you're presenting to them, you're never going to be able to deliver at scale the kind of personalized service that everyone really needs. You know, the old saying goes, you met one vet, you've met one vet, right? So you can have on paper two veterans who look the same, you know, let's say two E4s, infantrymen, right? Two Marine E4 infantrymen, same thing. So they should get the same TAP, right? Well, one of them may be a college graduate and the other may have a GED. One may have a family and kids, the other may not. One may have mental health issues and the other may not. So, you know, the bottom line is everybody needs customized services. So I think I view TAP as like, look, we need to continue to make it as high quality as we can, right? But at the end of the day, veterans or transitioning service members especially need customized services. The place I'd like to see TAP go is one where it starts with assessment. Everybody's assessed, and based on their needs, they get a customized or mass customized program. So, you know, if you're in the Supply Corps in the Navy, and you're looking to move into supply chain at Amazon, probably don't need that much support, right? It's likely that they will be of great, the company will want them. Maybe they need a different kind of transition vehicle than the E4 with a GED who has no idea what he or she wants to do. So I think that's where TAP needs to go, and I haven't seen indications it's going there right now. There's a couple tracks. I think there's an employment track, an entrepreneurship track, and a student track, and that's okay, but it's really a 20th century solution to a 21st century economy. It's not where it needs to be. I'd like to see a lot more mass customization and direct referrals, which is we're starting to see this through NPP, to the organizations like Still Serving Veterans that can provide that customized hands-on services that most transitioning service members need.
Yeah. One of the pieces I think is missing is telling service members to begin with the end in mind, right? So if whether your plan is to do one tour, get some education, experience, and get out, or two or five tours, whatever, always be anticipating that, you know, 2 years from now, I could be running out the end of my med board and being, you know, ushered out of the military. And so that being the case, always be focused on education and qualifications and making yourself better, stronger, faster, and more valuable to the job market for when you hit it. Because you never know. You never know. I mean, you've been on ship like I have, and accidents happen often on board ship, and they can be accidents that can result in you being out of the service very, very quickly. And that's true amongst all the services. So it's incredibly important that they in the military are providing opportunities to gain those educations. One of those things that contracting commands have is Defense Acquisition University. And so when I was at NAVAIR, I was a Navy chief, and I had access to seemingly unlimited DAU courses. So I took all the acquisition, logistics, program management courses that I could accomplish, and they were invaluable towards making me more functional in the job that I was in. If those kinds of assets were available to active duty service members so that they could be taking them as they can take them instead of having to go to the Navy campus office and take, you know, tests to get into school and all this stuff and maybe work around their schedule. Because some of the services come out, you know, the Army folks are coming out these days with degrees. Air Force is coming out with degrees, but you just don't see it in the Navy yet or the Marine Corps. So I think that they have some work to do there. We just yesterday, hot off the press, have been in conversation with DAU, and I think we have cracked the nut for SSV to be able to help people have access to the DAU library, which is all the DAU courses, plus the Harvard Business School courses, plus the Skillsoft courses, 90,000 courses that we have been given a pathway to be able to offer to the people that we're working with. And I believe we're the first VSO to be able to do that. So we're really excited about that. We got to test it, make sure it works, see if we can break it before we go big with it. But we're really excited to be able to start offering that and figure it out. At least DAU is willing to work with us to figure it out. 90,000 courses can go a long way. And it comes with 100% free access to LinkedIn Professional forever. So we're really excited about that. But what other are there other best practices that you can think of that you're hearing about?
Sure. I think you touched on a couple really important ones. I think advice I give folks when they're leaving, or most importantly, before they're leaving, before they're even really putting any concerted effort behind a transition plan, is You have to own your transition. You can't, there's no detailers, there's no monitors on the civilian side, right? It's a choose your own adventure, and you have to invest in yourself. You have to, one of the things I tell people is you're really not ready to look for a job until you know at least two of the following three things. Where you want to live, so geography, what industry do you want to be in, and what function do you want to perform within that industry? You need those three to triangulate on having a very focused and fruitful job search. If you don't know at least two of those things, you're not ready to look for a job. So you need to invest in yourself. And that's why I tell people, it's like, I know it's sort of, it's in the military, it's always about the team, but you actually have to make this transition about yourself. There's no one going to be holding your hand other than a great organization like Still Serving Veterans that can help you, but they're helping you. They're teaching you to fish. They're not fishing for you. So you've got to, you know, invest in that. Most people know where they want to live. They kind of have, they either say, I'll go anywhere, or I want to be in, you know, X city or part of the country. Industry, people kind of get it. I like to say, look, you pick a kind of company where you'll be proud to wake up in the morning and go to work, where your kids will be proud of you or your parents or whomever that you're working there, where you're happy about it. Because folks in the service, we're looking for that sort of, that spiritual fuel, I think. We're looking for this meaning and purpose in our work. So in picking industry, I think for a lot of folks in the military, that's important. And then finally, function. Function is probably the hardest thing for most folks in the military to understand the corporate context. I mean, effectively, it's your MOS, it's your NEC, it's your designator. But it's a little more flexible than that. But at the end of the day, you've got to choose. Do you want to be in finance? Do you want to be in marketing? Do you want to be in sales? It's really important. If you go to a career fair, let's say, and you meet with a recruiter from a company, they're not there to help you figure out what you want to do. They're there to help you come into their company, but they expect you to say, I want to be an accountant in Cleveland in your company. They're not here to hold your hand and help you find the right fit. So do the research, do the work. It's always appropriate to use LinkedIn and reach out to people for informational interviews. If you think, hey, I might be interested in doing what they're doing. Really great, like use the hell out of LinkedIn. LinkedIn research shows that veterans tend to have very insular networks. What does that mean? It means networks with other veterans. So use tools to expand. Certainly veterans are out there in the civilian world, that's great. But if you're gonna limit your network to that, you're gonna have problems. There's some great tools like Veterati, which is a networking application for mentorship. So it's a great way to request mentorship in a specific area of a company. Volunteer mentors volunteer 1 hour at a time, so it's not very onerous to them. But you can find almost any function, almost any industry in there. It costs nothing. It's a great way to have that informational interview, ask the stupid questions, and really learn and invest. And you don't have to be in transition or out of the military. You can do this at any time. So I think, and then once you've made those connections, got the questions answered, add those people in your network, ask them if they will, you know, allow you to link up with them in LinkedIn. I think, Dave, you also hit on a really important point that is a little shocking to folks when they leave the military. There's no organization on the planet that invests more in training than the U.S. military, and it's for free, right? I mean, there's some educational opportunities. Let's differentiate education from training. There's some educational opportunities that the military also affords you. Some are free, some are not. But usually if they're not, they're quite discounted, that are worth taking advantage of. But I've also seen people kind of go off, like just sign up for everything without any rhyme or reason to it. When you're looking for a job, you need to have a story, you know? So education that advances your story, like, yeah, I was a grunt, but now I want to be in supply chain. So I've taken all these courses on supply chain that were outside my MOS, and I'm showing my interest in pivoting to a new role. That makes a ton of sense to a recruiter. And it's more likely that, okay, well, you don't have experience here, but I see that you have real demonstrated interest and you're investing in yourself and your education here. When you get out of the military, and this is the thing that a lot of veterans find surprising, the corporate world doesn't invest very much in training. Some companies don't invest at all. And so if you're expecting that same level of training after you leave the military, it's not going to be there. I'm just flat out telling you it's not going to be there.
Absolutely correct.
You got to use those incredible, truly incredible opportunities like Dave was mentioning while you're still in uniform. And I love the example you brought up about the, how the Army and Air Force are very different than the Navy and Marine Corps in this regard. Let me give you a very specific example about medics, medics and hospital corpsmen in the Navy. Of those who want, so who leave the service and want to continue to work in the medical profession, half of them are unable to find jobs, which is crazy because there's a massive staffing gap in the civilian medical world right now. It's a crisis, actually. And so what's going on here? One of the very smart things the Army did is they made every single medic, and by the way, Navy, Air Force, Army, they all go through the exact same school in San Antonio, that initial school for, you know, combat medics. They all go through the same school, but the Army makes the folks going through that school get their civilian EMT test, make them test that. That's a civilian qual. Before they can graduate, it's a graduation requirement. What does that mean? That means as long as they keep it current, the day they take off that uniform, they can get a job as an EMT in many, many places. At
any town that has ambulances.
Pretty much, yeah. Now, there's some states that put some stupid onerous requirements on top of that, and we're working to get that changed. But just to give you a point, like that extra civilian certification, pursuing that. So what do you do if you're a corpsman in the same boat? Well, on your own, you go take the test is what you do. But it's just the Navy isn't going to give you time to do it, which is unfortunate. But, you know, that's the kind of example where use your time in service to prepare you for what you want to do afterwards.
I do want to mention that those DAU courses, you can find them at dau.edu. And if you have a CAC card, you have access to them all. So that's impressive.
Amazing.
Most anybody can get on the internet during downtime in the military these days. So it's helpful. So let me switch gears here a little bit. So in your time in philanthropy, I'm sure you have seen, and you probably know the numbers way better than I do, how many veteran service organizations there are out there and how many people are donating money to those organizations. And they just say, here's $10,000, here's $100,000, let's go see what you can do with it. And maybe they wait for a report back and that kind of stuff. And there's alternatives to that method, right? If you're gonna give your hard-earned money or the money that you've collected from your employees or wherever, and you're going to donate it to an organization, you want to know that that organization is going to do with it what you were expecting. And so what's your experience in those two different realms of performance versus, you know, just spray and pray?
Yeah, so spray and pray, I like that. I like to call it fire and forget philanthropy. So same vein though, same idea, which is a lot of corporate philanthropy and some private philanthropy as well. You know, they write the big check, they probably do a photo op with a big cardboard check, and then that's it. And we, the Call of Duty Endowment, have never been that way. It's always been about finding and funding the highest performing organizations and helping them grow. And so we do some very, I would say, thorough vetting. We have a program we call the Seal of Distinction, which is how we vet all the organizations we support. Organizations that don't pass it don't get our support, end of story. And then we reassess organizations we are supporting every other year. And it's made all the difference in the world. When we first started out in doing this program in 2013, our cost to place a veteran in a job was pretty much at parity with the federal government. Today, our grantees, like Still Serving Veterans, are doing this for 1/19th the cost per placement with higher quality outcomes than the Department of Labor's programs. And that's because of this approach. Accountability matters. People in the military intuitively know this, right? And I think people in the business world intuitively know this. Certainly Wall Street expects it. That's why we have financial statements from companies that are required, certainly by public companies annually. And accountability drives performance. Unfortunately, most donors out there, most large philanthropic efforts don't drive accountability. They don't require regular results that they assess. So if one of our partners isn't quite hitting the mark, we agree on targets every year. We get quarterly reporting. If they're not there, we talk about it. We use a technique I learned in business school called the five whys. It comes from the Toyota, actually. But it's when you see a problem, you ask the question why five times. And what that does is it helps you go pretty deep onto understanding the root cause of a problem. So we're not here to say, oh, you know, you're not on track. We're not going to fund you next year. We're here to be a partner because we see these problems with many grantees and help you solve it. And, you know, sometimes that's thinking it through. Sometimes that's connecting with people who have deep knowledge in a problem area. Sometimes that's giving you more money to solve a particular issue, whatever it may be. But we're involved partners that way. And again, I find that most philanthropic organizations are not, unfortunately. And, you know, look, accountability, it's human nature. It's why communism failed, right? Like, you need to have people accountable for results or results don't get better. That's just how it works. It's human psychology. And it's super important that we have that. We also, as I alluded to, we have this 20,000-foot view because we're looking into many different partners' work. And sometimes we see trends. I'll give you a great one that we noticed, I think it was about 5 years, we're doing particularly well helping women veterans. And that just happened to be Still Serving Veterans and Hire Heroes USA. And they were way ahead of everyone else. And some of our partners were just, you know, really not doing as well. And we wanted to understand why. And we went deep with Still Serving Veterans and we went deep with Hire Heroes. And then we asked them to come. And once we've distilled those lessons, teach it back to our other partners, which they did. And the cool thing about that is within a year, every single one of them was over-indexing on placing women veterans because they'd adopted the smart practices that Still Serving Veterans had executed and the ones Hire Heroes USA did as well. And that shows how an involved funder can really bring insight that's valuable to the space. Because, you know, I'll tell you, Paulette Risher, who was this CEO at the time, she knew that you all were good, but she didn't know how good compared to everyone else. And one of the great things about Still Serving Veterans and Hire Heroes USA was the willingness to share what they'd learned. And it made a huge difference for the veteran community. So that's just one example. But I think a lot of funders don't roll up their sleeves enough, you know, not to be annoying, not to be overbearing, but to add value in that regard.
It's a reasonable question. You know, what are you doing with the dollars that I gave you to do something with? So
absolutely.
You know, we don't mind answering those questions because it makes us be better, stronger, faster every year. So we're happy to do it. I attend a lot of job fairs, and on the back of our rack cards and most of our materials, we have the Call of Duty badge. And so when I'm talking to people and explain to them that what we're able to do for them is completely free of charge. We don't have to charge them anything for the mentorship. Doesn't matter how long we got to stick with them. We're going to do it until they're in the job that they want. I flip that card over and say, because for one thing, the Call of Duty folks make sure that we're able to do that. And the number of people who, you know, instantly light up because they are familiar with Call of Duty, but had no idea, which I can't believe it, but they have no idea that their dollars that they paid for themselves or for their kids like I do to play Call of Duty and buy the upgrade packs and everything, that a portion of that goes to do what we get to do. You know, 20,000 or so hires that we've been able to get in the last 18 years, and the vast majority of those, that, you know, due to the goodwill of code, they have no idea how much, you know, they are contributing to that end. So where have you seen the program? Was it, you know, when you first got into it or Call of Duty first got into it, how has it changed over the last 10 years or so that you've been doing it?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. Call of Duty, the game, as and Activision, the company, have been incredible partners in this space. I mean, indispensable. There's, you know, tens of millions of people play that game every day. And the platform they have, the unbelievably skilled people they have running it, have enabled us to create awareness and to raise funds about and for veteran employment in a really unprecedented way. I mean, tens of millions of dollars from in-game items, every cent of which has gone to placing vets in jobs, you know, to organizations like Still Serving Veterans. everyone feels great about that. We know for a fact the Call of Duty gaming community loves the cause. They're really behind it. More than 90% of Call of Duty gamers think it's a very important cause. That's pretty great, right? Like our employees, the employees at Activision and on the Call of Duty business are super engaged in this. Many times they'll say, this is the best thing I've done all year. Like I love, we tap into their knowledge and their experience and their labor to get a lot of stuff done in this regard. And it's just been, you know, super, super important. We couldn't make the mission go without them. You know, it's a great partnership. I think most fundamentally, the Call of Duty franchise thinks the most meaningful way to give back to the community that inspired the game is to help them find jobs. Because, you know, a little known statistic is, you know, when people tend to think about the issues veterans face, you know, two issues always seem to rise to the surface: PTSD and severe wounds of war. And I asked people, of the 3 million folks who served in theater in the 20 years following 9/11, how many lost a limb? And when I ask folks that, usually they'll come back, will say, I don't know, 300,000, 200,000, something like that. The number is 2,000. 2,000 out of more than 3 million. But the perception, and by the way, those folks deserve every bit of help they can get, for sure. But the perception is much greater than the actual need, right? There just aren't that many severely wounded warriors compared to the 3 million who served in theater. But that's the perception of being one of the top needs. But almost every transitioning service member, almost every veteran at some point needs help getting a job. And if you give them help getting a job, they become less dependent on the government. Their self-esteem increases, their mental health improves. Like it's a win-win for everyone, right? But yet, you know, less than one tenth of 1% of the federal government spend on veterans goes to employment. That's crazy. It's the number one requested service amongst veterans and transitioning service members, but less than 1/10 of 1% is spent on it. It's absurd. And quite frankly, a lot of the programs the government runs with that spend don't work very well compared to the work that still serving veterans does. So we have a long way to go. And we use that Call of Duty platform to shed light on the need being great, the value of meaningful work being tremendous, not just to the veteran and their family, but to the country.
Well, I know it's a different department, but is there anything coming up in Call of Duty world that that you want to announce here for the first time ever?
Oh, there's always stuff going on. Lots of exciting stuff. You know, the fall is Call of Duty time, as we like to say. So stay tuned. A lot of good stuff coming up.
So last year you were a speaker at the Military Influencers Conference in Vegas, and this year are you doing that again in Atlanta?
I don't know. Not sure yet. I'll keep you posted. To be determined.
To be determined. All right. Well, I know you are a very busy man, and we certainly appreciate the amount of time you've been able to give us today. I appreciate everything that you do and the ways that you support still serving veterans, and more to come. We're gonna make you not regret doing that. So thank you so much for being here today. Any last words for everybody?
Yeah, just it's been an honor and privilege, Chief. Thanks for having me. You know, we've been partnering with Still Serving Veterans for more than a decade. They are an incredible, incredible organization. Helping vets, we just fund the employment work, but obviously Still Serving Veterans does more work to help veterans to access benefits and other things like that. We've always just been so proud of the association. It's a wonderful organization. Keep up the incredible job. You and your team have a much harder job than I do, and I'm grateful for you every day.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Dan, and I look forward to doing it again.
Same here. Thanks, Dave.
Take care. Bye now.
Thanks for tuning in. Mission Transition, a podcast for veterans. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, or maybe even want to be on the podcast, shoot us an email at social@ssv.org.